Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Monday, February 11th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a five-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 333. Super special guest this week, comedian Matt Fulcheron from the Full Charge Power Hour podcast. I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I'm sitting on my couch. Just had a nice dinner, some jerk chicken and vegetables and some rice. And I'm not going to get the itis while I record this intro. Pod is a little late. Because I've been busy. I've been busy. I've been working hard for you guys, getting some content, getting some exclusive content and stuff that I'm going to share on the Patreon. And I'm super excited about the stuff that's coming up. I'll tell you about my week. My week was pretty cool. Back to the TPS reports at the day job. I had a couple auditions. One I had to put on tape in a right after a show. At an Elks Lodge in a makeshift green room. That's show business, baby. Did a self tape in a big room with a life size, with a huge toy train set set up or whatever. It's on the Instagram. I took a picture of it. It was really cool. And yeah, I had the first audition I had was for this miniseries, and it's to play a bus driver, and I learned the lines and everything, and it would be a miniseries on a network that you nerds like to watch on Sunday, and you tweet about it all the time, even when it's not on. And you nerds really lust for the show. I've never seen an episode, but it's on that. It would be on that network with a really famous person that was in a superhero movie that didn't really show up and when he was supposed to. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's top secret. No, but it would have been cool. It would be cool to get that. But cool thing about it, go to the audition. It's at one of those WeWork places, and I go in the room and it's really dark, and I'm like, okay, this is new for me. And everybody in there is nice. And what was cool about it was the fact that there was another actor there that was just playing the scenes, which was really cool. And he was like really in the moment, giving me everything. And you don't normally get that in an audition. Sometimes it's just like, hello, how are you? Why did you break my heart, Marcus? And then you have to, you know, play with that. That's all they give you. But this one, this kid is in there giving his best, and do the scene with him and one of the other casting directors, and it was really cool. And I only did it one time, and the cast director is this elderly woman that said, "That's perfect." And usually when someone says that, it's like, I'm not getting this. And it's not because it was a bad performance. It was a bad audition. It's just sometimes they might size it a little bit. Like, you're like, okay. And I'm not going to walk out there, yeah, I booked it. I booked that shit. I totally fucking booked it. But at the same time, I will say that it was nice to hear that, because when you get feedback like that, it's pretty cool. And so that definitely made me feel good that I wasn't wasting their time. And more importantly, I wasn't wasting my time with an audition. And then I always, most of the time, I park and I drive into the city and for auditions, and I use like my best parking app, which is great. If you drive into a city, wherever you live, if it's in a major city that accepts whatever type of parking app you use, it's great. And you make the reservations for your spot, and you know it's good, and it's cheaper a lot of times. So I pay the guy. I tell them I'm going to be about less than a half hour. I'm not going to be very long. And one of the attendants got mad at me. He was like, "Next time you come here," and he couldn't speak English well. And I'm not saying it like build a wall. Like he couldn't speak English. Like build a wall. So guys like him can't come here anymore. It was just like, dude, I don't even understand what you're saying. And you're being a dick to me. I did everything I was supposed to do. Don't be mean to me. You know what I mean? Like, come on, dude. I'm not trying to be a hindrance or anything. So that was a little annoying. But other than that, good audition. It was nice. And then Thursday, I did a show at Brian McGinnis. Shout out to Brian McGinnis, who is one half of the Playable Characters podcast with Calvin Cato. You know, I did the Tomb Raider episode a few months back, maybe like in the fall or something. It's there. You know it. You know I did it if you listen to the show. And it was really fun. Brian McGinnis hosted that show. He didn't host it. He was on the show. And it was his show that he put together. It was a fundraiser. And had a blast. It was fun. It was a good time, and really good food. This place is called Queens Bully, and it's in Forest Hills, Queens. And I had a brisket sandwich. Oh my God, really good. Tasted some of their wings. It's a good place. If you ever find yourself in Forest Hills, Queens, maybe after a Mets game or something, you can go in there. And it's got a really cool vibe. The staff was super nice, and they were there to have a good show. I was nervous about it at first because it's in a bar, and sometimes a lot of bar shows, in New York City at least, are like these guerrilla bar shows where the people that are eating there or the denizens of that bar are just, they don't know a show's about to happen. And it's just like, what the fuck? And then you're talking about your parents or somebody that broke your heart 3 or 4 years ago, and you're talking about that shit while they're eating their nachos, you know? So, and that's usually not good. It's never really that good. And so I walk in there, and it's all these people, and I said, because it reminded me, okay, so I walk in there, there's all these people, and Brian's like, "Hey, man, Chris, what's up? Thanks for coming, blah, blah." And I was like, "Hey, Brian, these people know that there's gonna be a comedy show, right?" And he was like, "Yeah, they all know. They're all they're all here for the show." And I was like, "Okay, thank God," because it reminded me of a really fun of a show that was like, this had to be maybe 3 years ago at this point. This place that I did for the homie Ethan Ullman, got to get him on the show, man. The show at this bar in Troy, New York, called Slide and Dirty. And I told you, but if you're a listener of the show, if you've been listening for a long time, you know about it. Was like one of those moments where it's like you really earn your money, and you just kind of like, it's like a role playing game where you like earn your points, your experience points. And like, I had to close out a show in this wild ass bar on a Friday night in Troy, New York. It was like they have this thing called Troy Night Out, where I guess once a month people get trashed and they go around on those trolleys and all kinds of cool stuff going on. It's a hard show. So I was like, had a flashback to that. And I was like, "Oh, this is going to be," but it was a blast. Have fun. And Friday after work, I drove back down to Atlantic City, which I was there less than a week ago at that point, and drove down to see Bill Burr at the Borgata. And my God, he was fucking amazing. I'd seen him this past October in Bridgeport, and he was great. He was terrific, Jedi level shit, all of that. But this was, and then it was like a few. It was a God. I don't know how big. Maybe that was a 10,000 seat arena in Bridgeport. I'm not 100% sure, but the event center at the Borgata this night, it was set up. That place, he sold it out, and the manager of the facility was telling me it was like 2,800 seats, and they get you in there. I was like scrunched in between two people. It was very an amazing show, but I was just scrunched in between these two people. They're big, I'm big. But he was incredible, and it was really inspiring to see. And he's special. He's definitely ready for a special. And it was just tight. Like, the bits that I remembered were really tight, and it was like they were fully fleshed out. So much fun, and it was really inspiring to see him rock out that way. And the way that he turned like a venue like that into a club, basically. Because it was just really, that space was really massive. I had never been in there. The first time I was there, I was going to try to like peek in and watch Sebastian Maniscalco. But it was my first time in there, and it was like kind of got VIP status because I worked there, and you know, your boy, I know people, and the way that it's just so massive. And I got to kind of cut through the lines and all that stuff, and because I was with the manager, and it was just an awesome night. And it took me on a Friday, which's normally like 2.5 hours. It was like maybe three. It was three, and I got there just right on time at 7, and it was packed. And thankfully, they started. They started like a little later. Like, Dean Del Rey opened, he did his thing, he was funny, and Bill brought him on maybe like 7:35-ish, 7:40-ish, and then Bill went until 9 o'clock, and it was really awesome. And he just kind of like had that theater thing where we in theater school we would talk about like stopping time. It's like, oh, he was up. It really was like he wasn't up there that long, and you didn't really notice it until he mentioned, like, oh, I've been running late, gotta get you guys out of here, but whatever. And yeah, it was just an incredible, incredible way to start off my birthday month. It was so good. This month I'm trying to do some cool shit and try to see some shows and stuff. And as I'm recording this, we're supposed to get snow tomorrow. And I'm supposed to be going to see Rachel Yamagata tomorrow at the City Winery. So I'm hoping that it's not bad. It's, you know, I hope, you know, because it's just, I'm old and I'm like, nobody likes driving in the snow. Anyway, so that was awesome. I got a hotel in like maybe 15 minutes away from Atlantic City in Absecon, New Jersey. And I stayed there at a Holiday Inn Express. Holiday Inn Express, their breakfast, their free breakfast, not bad. Not bad at all. I had like turkey sausage, like a little cheese omelet things, and a biscuit, and what else? And they had little Cinnabon, mini Cinnabon things. So that was really dope. I really liked it. That was great. And then Saturday, so I drove back, got a haircut. Then I went and had to drive back down to Central Jersey. Well, Atlantic City, South Jersey, Philly. But I had to drive back to a show that I did at an Elks Lodge in New Egypt, New Jersey. And I did the show with Madison Malloy and Molly, what's Molly's last name? Oh my God, Chris, come on, dude. What the fuck is wrong with you? Molly Cornfield. I had a brain fart. Molly's dope. Madison's dope. They're both funny. and we had a good time. This was different for me because a lot of times I'm riding by myself. It's all like solitude mode. I'm blasting music. And I did get to take a nap before I picked them up. And it was, so I was focused and everything. But it was cool to have them in the car, like talking and stuff. And yeah, we had a lot of fun. But the thing about that, it was like, it was like all white people, maybe like three or four black people in there. And I went up and they were kind of like the crowd that liked to be shit on. And I shit on them a little bit. And there were a couple moments where like the stuff that I was talking about, I was working on hashing out my black quarterbacks bit. And it brought up Colin Kaepernick and they said, he's not good. I was like, oh, really? He's not good. The guy that took his team to a Super Bowl, a Pro Bowl quarterback. He's not good. And I think I called the person race. I think I said it was a woman too, I think. And then another white woman said, another 53%er, she said, he's just half black. And I said, well, there used to be a time where if you just had one drop of black blood in you, you were black. And I basically said, look, I'm a professional. And if I say something, usually there's going to be a joke. If I make a statement, there's going to be a joke after that statement. So if you just loosen your assholes up a little bit, then you can have as much fun as everybody else is having. And I don't lie to you when I say, if I say I did all right or I did okay, you've listened to this show going on 6 years. Most of you, some of you have, some of you've tuned out, some of you have come back. I get it, whatever. But for 6 years, I've told you like, I did all right. It was okay. I had a good set. It was fine. I was okay. I told you when I bombed in my new Kobe's. And it was just, I was on another level. I was inspired by that, seeing that Bill Burr show when, you know, like standing in your truth and standing in your, and I was talking to the homie Randolph. He is not going to get mad for me saying, we were talking about like, I was telling him about the Burr show and everything. And he's like, now Chris, it's different when you're standing in your truth as a white man, as opposed to being a black dude. And I was like, yeah, it's true. And it is harder, but I was in the pocket. It was just, I had that Mario Invincible star for an hour. I did like 50 minutes and it was fun. I had a blast. And one of my classmates from undergrad came with her husband. That was fucking awesome. And I didn't bomb. So it was good to be in front of somebody that saw you, that knew you when you were 18, and thinking like, oh, maybe this kid didn't, is this guy ruining his life by pursuing show business? So that was really nice. And then Sunday I did a podcast. I did a recorded an episode of the Why Bother podcast with Ritu Chandra and Ken Krantz. Why Bother podcast is my favorite new podcast right now. They're maybe about 13 or 14 episodes in at this point. And the episode that I did will go up this week and I'll retweet it and share it on social media. But they're two Jersey-based comics and they're really funny. They got a really great rapport with each other. And I was so happy to be a part of their show. And I had a lot of fun getting to record with them. And we'll get both of them on here and we'll hang out with them on my pod soon. We scheduled it. We booked it. I'm blabbing way too fucking much on this thing. But I'm going to, what else did I want to say? And then Sunday, and then right after that, I went into the city and saw a play. I saw this play called God Said This by Leah Nanako Winkler, who is a Japanese-American playwright. She's biracial. She's Japanese and white. Part, yeah. and I've scheduled she might be on the show, and I'm working with getting her on the show and talking to her about her career and all that good stuff. And I went to see her show at Primary Stages in the West Village, and it was so much fun. I kind of knew this, but I didn't. If you hang out in the city on Sunday, the parking's free, and it's a whole new world, and it's awesome. And so I saw her show, and it was great. Really, really dug it. I want to see if it closes February 15th. So this is the last week you can see it. I recommend it. So if you're in New York City, go to primarystages.org and get a ticket. Cause it was really good. I really dug it. And I think that's it. I could say more. I also want to say music wise, I've been listening to a lot of Clear Soul Forces, this rap group based out of Detroit. I've told you about them like a few years back, but they're really good. They got a new album coming out called Still, and it's coming out February 22nd, and I pre-ordered it. And I know you can stream stuff, but I wanted to support these dudes because they're really dope. And they're led by this dude named Novelist, who also has his own like solo projects. He kind of reminds me of delivery wise. Novelist reminds me of Sky Zoo, like that's slightly more animated than Sky Zoo is to a certain degree. But I was thinking about this, like, because these guys are relatively young. I'm assuming that they're under 30, and this is the type of hip hop that I like. I like dudes like Clear Soul Forces. I like Joey Badass. There's other guys that are really dope, and I kind of worry like, oh, I don't know about Tekashi 6ix9ine or some of these other young guys that I just can't seem, that I don't relate to. And it's not that I'm like, that I'm not better. Like, I'm like, I don't listen to, it's just not my thing. But there are young cats out there that I do vibe with. So it makes me feel a lot better. I was like, oh yeah, I'm not totally out of touch. Like, these dudes can rap. I'm calling them kids. They're like 25, 26. One of them has a family. I think Novelist has a wife and two kids. He's more of a man than me. But no, these dudes are dope. So, let's see, what are their names? E-Fave, Elijah Day. Novelist used to be called J-Rock. And then there's another guy named Laz. And they got a lot of, if you look them up on YouTube, the first thing that pops up is Get No Better is the name of the song, and they're on a rooftop just rapping. And a few months ago, maybe a couple months ago, Dion Cole, really dope comedian Dion Cole, showed a clip of their video from like 2012. I was like, I already knew about him. I knew about him before you, but whatever. But you know, when you get to him, you get to artists when you get to him, and I'm kind of like a hipster when it comes to shit like that. But 2012 was when Get No Better came out. They got a bunch of stuff on their Bandcamp page. Clear, C-L-E-A-R, Soul, S-U-O-L, Forces. I highly recommend it. If you just like rapping ass dudes. That's it. So, I'm going to leave you guys with that and get you to Matt Fulcheron. I feel like since I left you in the lurch, yes, on Sunday, I blabbed a little more for you on today. So Matt Fulcheron, I met him while working at the Borgata. I worked with him and John Fish, and Matt's a really cool dude, a comedy veteran, and we just kind of shot the shit, and it was really great to talk to him. And make sure you check out his podcast, The Full Charge Power Hour. Get it wherever you listen to podcasts, and enjoy my conversation with the great Matt Fulcheron. What are we in? We're in day three of this show.
We're in day three of this show.
Yeah.
You right before you started, you asked if we were burnt out, and the reason I'm burnt out is because I had a terrible day of travel.
Yeah.
That I'm still recovering from.
Oh, still.
Well, yeah, because yeah. I mean, well, I'm 44 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday, I woke up at about noon in Dallas, Texas. Did a show. Went out to dinner, had a couple drinks, not a lot,
yeah,
but enough to the point where I knew I probably wasn't going to sleep that well. Left the hotel at like 3,
mm-hmm.
got to the airport at like, you know, left at 3:30, got there at 4, flew from Dallas to Philadelphia, took a train to the Greyhound station, took a Greyhound to Atlantic City, took an Uber to the Borgata, and got in and slept for about 4 hours, and then did a show. I mean, that day, I'm going to be recovering from that day probably for another day or two.
Wow.
Just because it's just not a lot of sleep for that day. And I don't know. It gets harder to recover from that type of thing.
I think that, I always say, like, anytime I have to drive a long distance or anything like that, it's always, I'll get a hotel if I have to, even mm-hmm. if it's not in my...
Yeah.
Even if it's not in the fee or... For the gig, I just
it's worth it.
Yeah.
If you got the money on you, mm-hmm. it's worth it.
The older you get, it's harder to do.
You got to treat yourself. And mm-hmm. if a Motel 6 is treating yourself, then goddamn it, treat yourself.
I try to not do the hotels with the, what is it? Like, they're not really hotels. It's like when you walk out, there's the...
Motels, the, I think is what those are called. That's and it's covered on Louis C.K.'s FX show, but it's right on the money. It's like... And Bill Burr talks about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get to your room without going through a lobby, it's not a good place to stay.
Right.
Because you're just like one window pane away from whoever.
Yeah.
I've stayed at hotels where, like, I think it was in Kentucky or it was in Nashville, Tennessee, and they advertised as like, yeah, it's in this movie, it's in that movie. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I get there, I'm like, oh, it's in the movie because it's a shitty hotel in the movie.
Yeah, and a lot of people died there or some fucking horror movie.
And I'm like, oh, of course it's in, like, Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And that one in particular was so messy. It was like, I forget what it was, but I could tell they didn't clean it at all.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, so gross. Yeah. And I still tipped. I don't know. I'm like... I refuse to be the bad guy, even if they're the bad guy.
Right.
Because I think I paid like $35 for the hotel. What's another two or three?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Yeah, I joined the Marriott Club, Marriott mm-hmm. Rewards, and Holiday Inn, like IHG. So if I'm around somewhere, maybe I can save a little bit of money mm-hmm. or see how those points accumulate or some shit like that. But yeah.
The truth is, it's all relatively similar prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, you know, it's almost like never get the cheapest one.
Right.
Get the one...
The mid-tier.
Get the mid or, like, just maybe the second cheapest one.
Yeah.
It's going to be better.
Yeah. That's like I had a gig New Year's Eve. The hotel wasn't included. It was 2.5 hours from my place. And I had gotten up... That day, I had gotten up at, like... 4:30 in the morning, New Year's Eve.
Uh-huh.
Went to my day job, worked all day, and then drove in the rain. And I was like, I'm not going home in this shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, the cops are waiting to pull you over. They're waiting to give you a ticket. I'm like, I'm not giving them that. I got a room about 8 miles away from the venue.
Yeah.
So I was just like, doing the gig, and that's it.
Yeah, it's not really about making a huge profit.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a gig where it's, even if you make the most money you can make mm-hmm. out of it and you spend as less as you can,
right.
it's still not changing your fucking month that much,
mm-hmm.
then why scrimp on like $55 or whatever it is?
It's true. Yeah. I think like with the Marriott, it's like 100 and change. It's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right.
Yeah.
So are you liking this gig so far?
Well, this gig is pretty good. I did it this summer. There was way more people in the audience.
Yeah.
And there was way more energy.
Mm-hmm.
Still decent gig, but I also just was working for Tom Segura this past weekend, and that was, like, very exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the shows were packed out, and the audiences were very excited.
Ready to see
And they knew what they were doing there. A lot of people at the shows, that we're doing this week. And again, I don't mean to sound ungrateful because no, I'm so happy to be here.
Same.
But they're just kind of randomly popping in, like, yeah. Oh, what's this? And I think they kind of get advertised at the front desk, like, you know, we have a comedy show, blah, blah, blah. And so it's not exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But they're getting good comics.
But I tell you what, I love working with you and John, and we only have to do 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And cafeteria is pretty good, and the rooms are pretty good. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I forget what the original question was, but I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
And I would like to go home, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know,
I'm staying through Sunday, so I still have like 5 more shows to do.
Right, right. I'm sort of like, I don't know, I guess going home is like, I have to go back to my regular life.
Sure, sure, sure.
In the summertime, like I think I had said this before to maybe you or John or Daniel, where it was just like, the last time I had, it felt like I had a real break was when I was here the first time in the summertime, and I was just going and going and going and gigs, auditions, all this stuff, and then not really getting to rest.
Yeah.
And I realized like, oh my God, that was the best, like that was great.
Yeah.
Slept well, didn't have to wake up early.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that is the best part, waking up whenever you want. We are we got 20 minutes of real responsibility a night.
Right.
And about an hour and a half of actually having to be somewhere.
That's true.
For the night. So
that's true. Yeah.
We're good on that.
Yeah.
We got time to rest.
Yeah.
Somehow I still can't get all my errands done because you're not at home.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to be productive, doing the pod, doing like, I don't know, I'm going to pay some bills tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm going to pay some bills today, I think. It's on my list.
Yeah.
I don't know how the day can get away from me, but it does. Yesterday, I woke up at 2, so that day was shot.
That'll do.
Monday was shot from travel and just sleeping, and then Tuesday was shot from waking up so late.
Yeah.
And then today, I got a fighting chance. I woke up at noon.
Okay.
I'm getting better every day, you know?
Did you go right to bed after we ate dinner?
No, I went upstairs and to my room and watched a little bit of TV and stuff, and you know, my schedule was, I knew my schedule was going to be off because I woke up at 2.
Yeah.
So I didn't even try. I actually did lay down in the bed and watch some TV.
Yeah.
And I was surprised I even got tired. And I got a good night's sleep. It was pretty great.
Yeah, I slept pretty well.
But sometimes when you get a really good night's sleep, it makes you even more tired. Like, in a fucking whirlwind over here, dude.
Yeah.
I am in a sleep deficit. You know, I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah, man. It's something when you try to get your bearings back. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Like, I just noticed, like, the older I get, but I got to get my ass back in the gym and get my shit together.
Yeah.
Turning around, getting too fat.
I'm
overweight cop. You know, take for the overweight cop audition. I'm like, okay.
You want to go out for skinny cop.
It's time to turn around. It's like average fucking
average cop.
Guy. Average fucking cop.
That's how TV is, though. It's either, like, really skinny or anything else is overweight because, I don't know, you've worked in TV and movies, the people that look normal on TV, when you see them in real life, they look famished.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually like shorter than you think. They look like little boys and shit.
Right, yeah, they do look really tiny. They, a lot
and
of
the
them
women,
do.
You know, they're like 100 pounds or under, dude.
Yeah.
It's nutty.
It's crazy, yeah. So, after this week, you know, I'll have, you know, I'll get my shit back together and just focus, hit the smoothies.
Yeah.
Gym.
I was on a bus last week, which is so great, but it's like so disorienting as far as like,
how do you do it though? Like the Greyhound, has it gotten any better?
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this is like a tour bus with Segura. That was like a lot of fun.
Okay.
But it's still like, you know, there's no gym or anything, and so you're like, you know, I try to walk and I don't know, it's just like I definitely can feel myself putting on weight.
Yeah.
Because there's also this weird thing I do when I'm on the road. Like here, I'm not worried about it because we can eat whenever we want here.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I'm playing in a different town every day, and I'm sure you've done runs like that. Mm. You're like, or like I'm in a town where like I don't know how late everything is.
Yeah.
Open. I eat whenever I get a chance.
Oh, okay.
I don't care if I'm hungry or not. I'm like, just give me the food.
You don't know what.
Whereas time. Like in my real normal life, I only eat when I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And sometimes I only eat like once a day just because like, that's just where I'm at. Like,
I think I have to eat after this because I ate at like 9 o'clock.
You better. Yeah,
I need to do something.
You do.
Yeah, I'll go to that Because I don't know, you can get tired of the cafeteria
food. You sure can.
But it's good, though. Like, the salad is good.
Dude, I honestly don't think I'm going to get that tired of the cafeteria food.
No, you won't?
No. I mean, because there's just so many different options. And there's a salad bar. And
I think tonight, we're doing too much shop talk.
But whatever.
It's fine. I don't care, but it's like,
one thing I've learned about podcasts is people are bored out of their minds.
Yeah.
No offense, everybody.
No.
But they just want to listen to whatever.
No, I'm a listener myself. I know. I'll try to make it interesting.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, like, where you're a Maryland guy.
I grew up in Maryland.
Talk about
Southern Maryland. I grew up in a very small town. My parents are from New Jersey.
Uh huh.
So,
what part of Jersey?
Teaneck and Bergen County.
That's where Closter. I live.
Okay.
I live in Bergen County.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. So that's where my parents are from.
Did you? And you didn't grow up there?
Grow up there, but I go there like twice a year or whatever.
It's nice. I like it.
Yeah, and it's like, so Southern Maryland is, I don't know how you would describe it. It's pretty Southern.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
It's like the gray area of the North and the South.
Yeah.
Like, and so
go down Route 301.
So I was, you know, my parents weren't from there,
mm-hmm.
which made it a little bit different experience for me than like most people there, because there's like generations and generations down there of people that everyone's got the same last name and stuff like that. But there is a Navy base down there.
What's the Navy base down
it's
there?
It's called Patuxent River Naval Air Station.
Oh, I didn't know.
And
that.
That's where, so there are a lot of people from the outside world down there.
Yeah.
And my parents were two of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And
why do you know why they moved?
Yeah, well, my dad got a job down there.
What did your dad do?
He's an aerospace engineer.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right, yeah.
I'm really following in his footsteps.
What about your mom?
My mom is a receptionist.
Okay.
And so she used to be like a receptionist in like New York City.
Yeah.
Like Mad Men.
Sure.
And then she went down there, and I think she was kind of bored.
I can imagine.
You know?
Yeah. Because it's pretty slow.
But my dad had the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my mom's fine down there, but my dad was like a born again redneck. Like this.
Okay.
He fell in love with it. And when he went there, when he was enlisted as a younger guy, he went to that area and he was like, I'm never coming back down here. Because
really?
When they moved there, there was only like a McDonald's and a grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think my mom even like, I'm picking up over the years, my mom like kind of panicked, like, what the fuck? Because she's still in her 20s, you know, at that point.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, oh, we're just moving down here.
What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your dad's name?
My dad's name's John.
What the fuck are you doing, John?
Mm-hmm. Well, back then, you don't just get divorced either. Like, just because, you know what I mean? You stick it out at least for a little while.
Yeah.
You
That's
know?
Something, though. You don't. It is, like, it's so much, it's like a fucking city there now. Now it's anywhere USA.
Yeah, yeah, like, now when I go there, I see every chain restaurant I see everywhere else.
Yeah.
Which is really still strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives my mom a little something. She's like, we got a this, we got a that, we got a Chevy's, we got a Texas Roadhouse, we got a Starbucks, we got a Coffee Bean. Like, she's thrilled for the chain restaurants.
What are we talking like when you were growing up? Like, '80s, '90s?
Yeah, I grew up. I was born in the '70s. Grew up in the '80s. '80s is what I really remember.
Okay, so you're like 8 years older than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just trying to do the time.
So there wasn't a whole lot going on,
right?
In general, back then, like compared to nowadays, like. So there wasn't a whole lot. All I did was skateboard starting around like 85.
Okay, okay.
That was like all of a sudden, that opened up, and that's kind of the beginning of my stand-up career in a weird way, because it just opened up this crazy Narnia doorway to California, and there was all this punk rock music I never heard of, and you got to remember before the internet, like, it was, you just didn't hear anything unless it was on the radio. I'd listen to like Casey Kasem's Top 40, and then all of a sudden there was like this whole world opened up, and like all of a sudden I was concentrating on like what people in California were doing, and I was way into skateboarding.
Did you get into, this is a sidebar, but did you get into any of these skateboarding films that came out this year? Minding the Gap.
I saw Minding the Gap.
I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, that's really great.
Oh my god,
that's really complex, especially for I didn't know anything about it when I went to see it. My girlfriend was just like, yeah, it's like a... I just looked at the poster or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Skateboarding. I'll go check it out.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really well done.
Yeah.
Very insightful.
Mm-hmm.
A little depressing.
It blew me
away. But some great skateboarding.
It blew me away because I got a buddy, Jeff Cerulli, who's a comic, New York comic. And he's like, you got to see Mind in the Gap. I was like, all right. Because he's a documentary. Mm-hmm. He's a documentary director. And
yeah.
Also... But he's like, I was like, okay, how do I see it? And it's yeah. on Hulu. I was just blown away.
It is. Like, the guy really went all out, especially mm-hmm. when he was interviewing his mom. Like, yeah. really putting her on the spot.
Yeah.
As far as child abuse. The mm-hmm. movie's really about child abuse.
Right.
Folks, if you're listening. And then, just when you're starting to get depressed, they throw in some cool skateboarding. And it lifts you up a little bit. And then you come crashing back down.
Yeah. Mid-90s was okay.
Mid-90s, it was nice for, like, nostalgia.
Sure, right. Right.
No disrespect, Jonah.
I like
because I thought it was a great effort.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way, but I think I just wanted more of a story or something.
I think some people were like the ending was kind of, but like I did, I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I liked Skate Kitchen a little better.
I don't know if is that the girl one?
The girl one, yeah.
That one looked good. I didn't see it though.
Just a solid coming of age.
I can see
story.
Twitter now. How come you didn't watch the girl one, Matt?
Well,
I haven't had a chance.
I wanted to complete the trilogy of those three, so I'm a nerd in that way.
Yeah.
But that's also on Hulu, so I was like, all right, let me see that one too. But so skateboarding opened you up. You were like what, 13 years old?
No, I was more like 10.
10, okay.
And there was like a half pipe in my neighborhood, and I don't know how much people know about hardcore music. A guy named Toby Morse lived in my area. He's a singer in a band called H2O, which is pretty successful.
Okay.
And then his brother plays guitar in The Offspring now.
I've heard
and
of
Juliette Lewis's band. Like,
oh, okay.
there was some, it was a small town, but like things were happening.
Yeah.
Like it was very exciting.
What town?
Did
you say what town?
Well, I lived in California, Maryland.
Yes,
at that
we
town.
Talked about
so that.
So that
was like,
often. Yeah.
It looked like a suburban neighborhood, but there was no urban to go with the suburban. Mm-hmm. But it was a bunch of houses, cul-de-sac, the whole thing.
Sure. How far is that from Waldorf?
It's a good hour in a car.
It's still an hour.
I would think it's 40 minutes to an hour away. We'd go up there all the time, and I'm pretty sure it was an hour away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that is pretty deep. Because I was thinking, my parents live near Andrews Air Force Base.
Yeah.
And to get to Waldorf, it would be about a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you go down 301, go down Route 5, hit 301. And yeah, I was telling you, I had to take my mother to this random sewing machine place.
Yeah.
And I think it was Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And we went, and yeah, California was there. We went to, like, so how the seafood's good there too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, everybody raves about it. Crab cakes, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Like, I forget the one we went to was like, Captain something, but it was great.
It's Captain, I was going to say Captain Phillips, but that's not right. Because there is a Phillips.
Yeah, I'm the captain now.
Yeah.
So, skateboarding.
Skateboarding's always been a huge influence.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, it kind of taught me how to do stand-up in a way. It's very similar in that, like, with stand-up, you got to commit to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you'll make it. But if you commit to it, you can slam pretty hard.
Yeah.
But if you half-ass it, you're not going to do either. You're not going to slam mm-hmm. or you're not going to succeed.
That's true.
But you're not going to... You have no chance of making it.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. I don't know if I'm explaining that properly, but you really have to commit in both things if you're going to make it eventually.
Right.
Yeah. And then just like... There was just something to skateboarding back then, too, where, like, you can just... It was one of the first things I saw where, like, you don't need really help from your parents or you don't need to be able to play a guitar to be in a band,
mm-hmm.
that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you could just, like, build a ramp, and now you're skateboarding. And it was one of those things, too, where, like, if you tried it, you'd be surprised how far you can get, how mm-hmm. much you look like the guys in the skateboard magazines.
Right.
And I feel that way with stand-up, too. Like,
yeah. All
right, I remember just saying, okay, I'm a stand-up comic now. And I went up and I would do open mics, and the next thing you know, I had like 2 or 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing it.
Well, I want to get to that, but I still want to do more childhood
stuff. Sure, sure,
sure. Like, I always like to just kind of do like more Planet Krypton
sure.
stuff
yeah,
before
yeah, yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So
that's middle school.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had a little brother who was also a skateboarder.
Okay.
So, and the big thing, our big outliers thing for the Fulcheron family was we had a basement, a really big basement.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could skate straight through the winter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we were able to, like, we didn't have any off seasons.
Yeah.
We would skate every day, a couple times a day.
Your parents, did they like that, or were they like...
I can't believe they put up with it.
Really?
Because it's so loud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All that, yeah.
And it's not like it's good for the house.
Mm-hmm.
But
they let,
whatever, they let us do
kept
it.
Kept you out of trouble.
They knew where we were.
How were you in school?
I was... I got in a lot of trouble for having a smart mouth. Like, I didn't know how to control my mouth when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
I really wanted the attention, and I would just, like... fucking get in trouble all the time. I wanted to get good grades, but I wasn't even good at that until I was like in high school. I started to figure out how to get good grades, and it sounds stupid, but I didn't know to just memorize what they told you and regurgitate it.
That's basically
because I would just read it a lot and I wouldn't memorize it.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I learned that, which I should have known well before that, I was like, oh, this is fucking easy as shit. You know what I mean? You just spend a couple hours memorizing shit. You don't have to. You don't have to think. You just have to like memorize what they told you.
That is true. Is you don't have to think until you're
math, maybe.
Yeah. Well, like math was not my.
But it's mostly just memorizing the principles and the formulas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or keeping them in your TI-85 calculator.
Oh yeah, that's a good move too.
I can't do that shit. I was not good.
Yeah.
Chemistry or math, not good.
I went to a Catholic school and they had this one math teacher who would have us grade our own tests, which is such a mind fuck. Because you want to get good grades, but then you don't want to go to hell either.
You should use that's kind of a good bit. That's, you don't want to go to hell.
Yeah,
either.
Yeah.
Oh, so what was that like? What was Catholic school like for you? What's the name of your school?
Well, I went to St. John's like when I was really young. Mm-hmm. I'm still pissed at Catholic school.
Why?
For like, just because I think they give me a lot of mental problems. I think
really?
It's weird to teach kids math, science, English, religion, because then it's like all this Bible stuff is like fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Catholic school put a lot of like strange guilt and paranoia in my head.
Mm.
And like it's very based on like punishment. You're going to hell if you do this. Or I don't know where I picked it up. I think this was more in high school. Like if you even think about sin, you're a sinner, and sinners go to hell.
Jesus.
Like this is, well, it's all part of like I don't know if this is just my school, but they say if you think about doing sin, that means you would sin. If you were in the opportunity.
Wow.
It's really fucked up to me. Now, my high school was a lot more open-minded. It sounds like it was crazy, but they would have, like, a class called World Religions.
Yeah.
And they teach you different religions.
Was that also a Catholic school?
That was a Catholic school. My high school was a much different scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Because the main objective there was not to be a religious person. The main objective there was to... get you to college.
Right.
My parents sent me there because they were scared I wasn't going to get to college because my public school teachers wouldn't recommend me for college prep classes in public high school because I was too much of a smartass. So they personally didn't like me, so they wouldn't recommend me for... And not that I was a great student at that point either. So my high school thing, there was Christianity there, and they taught Christianity, but it was much more practical. And it was much more open-minded and it was much less superstitious. But it also depended on what teacher you had and what class you were in at the time.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that they would teach world religion just shows you that, like, okay, there's different perspectives.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know. My high school experience was much different.
I went to Catholic school from preschool to the end of undergrad and... it's all that I knew, so
yeah.
I can't speak from any perspective.
I had 2 years of public school.
Okay.
And it was fucking amazing. It really was, dude.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I mean, I'm trying to think, like, because we had the same thing, you know, like, world religions, and we had, like, in high school, like, the fundamentalist approach to the Bible, and the loose, what is it called? The, fucking forget it.
But the point is, there's like a lot of different perspectives.
Yeah.
And once you're thinking on different perspectives, that's when you're in good shape.
Right.
You know, and I know, I find that nowadays people are very scared of different perspectives. Like,
so weird. That's the thing. Like, and you bringing up the world religions thing. I graduated in 1998, and 9/11 happened. You know, 3 years later, 3-4 years later, and I was like, well, that's Islam, but that's a perversion of
the text. Right.
So.
Yeah.
And it was, and you know, like, and we were in a Catholic college, and it wasn't like these fucking, no, it's these people that are,
it's an extremist group. Yeah.
Just like somebody that would, like, blow up an abortion clinic.
Right, right. Or like, I don't know what the Unabomber's take on everything was, yeah. but he was probably a Christian.
Yeah. You know, so
if he lived in Oklahoma, he was probably a Christian.
Right. So
forgive me, internet, if I'm getting these facts wrong. But
it's just like rational thought, where it wasn't like, we got to get these fucking people that are different.
Yeah, yeah. But now if you even say, like, okay, listen to me, like, think about this, people will shut you down before.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't even bother, like, trying to give people any different perspective anymore if I can tell they don't want it. Like,
it's, do you just give up? Do you just, like, shut down?
I have no reason to really sway people's minds.
Right.
And I'm really just talking about, like, on Twitter and Facebook.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, I don't bother with that. Like, no. If that's how you think, I don't think, you know, you're looking for a fight at the very least. Like,
right.
And I'm not going to change your mind. And you're probably not going to change my mind.
Absolutely.
And so I just want to avoid the whole thing.
Dude, that's why I keep Facebook and Twitter. Like, my Facebook is like, I checked into this movie theater. I'm going to see this movie. Oh, you nerds didn't tell me how good this TV show was.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of this? Here's my podcast.
Right, keep it fun.
Yeah,
that's the original concept of these things.
Yeah, I don't. Like, the last time I got in an argument was about, my listeners hate when this. It could be a drinking game. I talk about this video game called The Last of Us, which is one of my all time favorite game. And we had an argument. I had an argument with some guys about the ending and was this person a bad guy or was he good? Shit like that.
Yeah.
But I don't do that shit. I have a podcast. I could talk about that shit.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's not worth it.
No.
It's not worth it at all.
No, I know. I've done it before, and now I'm just backing. It was never my agenda.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Right.
It was just be like, oh, this is what I'm thinking about. And people would get upset with me. But I thought I was being completely rational. And I didn't think I was being hateful. I didn't think I was being a jerk. But people would get upset with me. And I'm just not interested anymore in that. I know what I think. I know how I'm going to vote. And that's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't convince anybody to change. But I do see all of it.
Like, yeah, sure.
It's good because you got to know, as a comic especially, you got to know what people are talking about, what people are saying.
Absolutely.
And have your take on it. But I think that's important that you brought that up, though, like the world religion thing. And it, because I always thought, like, I mean, if I ever have kids, I would, let's say I would send them to probably send them to private school.
Yeah.
I don't know about cat, but I had a good education.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's where I first got my eye on the prize.
Yeah.
Was this Catholic private school, because
you had to hunker down, right?
And the teachers cared. Like, they wanted you to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And even the fuck-ups had their mind on their brains. Even kids on drugs were, like, still kind of wanted to get good grades. Like, it was weird. Like, that was,
yeah.
If you were there, you were expected to do well.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could feel that.
Yeah, it's like you're not, like, your parents are putting money in. And, like, that was the pressure.
There was
for
an
me.
Investment.
Yeah, it wasn't. I was self-motivated because I didn't want to let my parents down. I, you know, they paid. And then it was just sort of like, I say this all the time when it comes to education. Like, at that school, honor roll, like, they put it in a glass case, everybody's GPA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All the seniors, they would put, like, your name and then all the schools you got accepted
in.
How much money you made for those.
Right, right, right.
It was no joke. Like, there would be, like, honor, there would be college prep, like, English, like, the normal, like, college prep English, honors, and then AP.
Yeah.
And there was a time, like the shift between like maybe sophomore year when they had testing for AP and honors, and people were like, that shit was like no joke.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh, you're in college prep?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you were
yeah.
fucking dumb, but you're yeah. in college prep. Yeah, you're trying to get your ass to college
yeah.
to be like yeah. competent.
Yeah. And then, it was crazy. Honestly, when I got to college, it was way easier than yeah. my high school.
It was so, it was just like the thing you have to navigate getting into college is like your mom's not waking you up. Nobody's really telling yeah. you what to do.
That was never a problem for me. It was. I don't know why. Either. It just wasn't because another thing they did at my high school to really get you used to for college is everyone would have a different schedule mm-hmm. and you'd even have like free time to yeah. get you used to the college day where mm-hmm. like, okay, you got an hour off. It's up to you what to do with your time.
Yeah.
And you also have to make the class on time. Sounds stupid, but it, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the reason or not, but yeah. I had no problem getting to class on time.
Where'd you go to college?
At first, I went to Frostburg, which you probably okay, know Frostburg. That is a school full of fuck-ups.
Really?
Like, people go there. No offense, Frostburg. People go there, like, it's almost like, I don't think it's that hard to get into.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
We had some kids go there.
And most of the people there, and I don't know if this is, like, all colleges or what.
Yeah.
At least, like, half the freshman class was just there to get hammered, get drunk. Wow. People were always showing up. You know, people didn't give a fuck about school there.
I didn't know
that was anything. So strange to me that like people would pay to go to school and like not try. That was so nuts to me. And yeah. I was lucky. I didn't pay for my education. My parents did. But I was still like you just said, like, I'm not going to have them pay.
Right.
Even though it really wasn't my idea.
Yeah.
I still wasn't going to have them pay money for me to fuck no. off. Because I still had plenty of time to drink and yeah. fool around.
Yeah.
I was like, but I would see everyone would like, that's where I really learned about like peer pressure and people just calling my phone and being like, we're going out tonight. And be like, no, I can't. No, we're going out. Like relentless.
Yeah.
Like peer pressure.
That's, yeah, our school. Now, was that in the middle of nowhere?
It was in Western Maryland and yeah. it's in the woods. Cumberland, Maryland's a more, it's okay. closer to West Virginia.
Yeah.
It was in the sticks. It was in the mountains.
How far from Hagerstown?
Probably not far.
Cause I went to Mount St. Mary's.
Yeah, my friend went there. I went to visit there a couple okay. times. Same deal.
Okay,
you know,
yeah,
kind of the middle of nowhere, there. But it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. We had a McDonald's and a Jubilee.
That's what we had. Yeah,
Jubilee.
Then I went to UMBC after I was there and like I had no skate. This sounds crazy.
Yeah,
but I had no skateboarder friends.
Yeah,
it snowed a lot.
Right,
dude. I was so into skateboarding for so long. And, like, it was the type of thing those same peer-pressuring friends would be like, I can't believe you skateboard. That's so lame. And I didn't buy into any of that at all.
Oh, so okay,
I
you went did.
To,
okay, so
I was like, I'm going to Baltimore because there's a lot to skate in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And that school was actually, like, way less fun, UMBC,
mm-hmm.
University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Right.
But
I did a show there once.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's where... So I started to get into creative stuff in high school.
Yeah.
I didn't really realize it. I did like two plays as an actor.
Do you remember what plays?
I did The Miracle Worker, which is about Helen Keller.
Oh, wow. Who did you play in that?
I played the dad, Mr. Keller. And I, like, that was my first lesson in not putting enough effort into it.
Oh, really?
Because I just basically just spent the whole time just trying to learn my lines. Like, yeah. And that was, like, my whole performance was like, what's my line? Then I did another... play called Pillow Talk, which is just like it's like a Rock Hudson Doris Day
okay.
movie.
Yeah,
that one was much better because I could comprehend
what was going on,
and we rehearsed it so much. I think I did the first play with we alternated the role, so I didn't spend as much time rehearsing. Mm-hmm. This one we rehearsed every day, and I never had to memorize the lines. We just did it so much that I knew it. And that was a beautiful experience. That was actually fun. Like, I might have had nerves before I got on stage, but I, like, totally trusted everything. And I remember my friend, who I'm still friends with today, he's like a professional graffiti writer. We'll get into that later.
Sure.
But I remember he messed up a line, and we were able to improv through it and kind of, like, we were laughing together on stage. It was, like, it was a pretty great experience.
Yeah.
I was also in a band. I started to play guitar. I sang in a band my senior year. And then the summer before I went to UMBC, I started a rap band with my friend
who
was also a skateboarder. And when you say rap band, I mean, it's terrible. But, like, we had a good sense of humor about it.
Sure.
We were like Weird Al.
Gotcha.
We weren't taking it very seriously.
Okay.
But we still loved hip-hop, and we were, like, trying our best to make it sound good. First year at UMBC was just kind of like a... Nothing. Like, nothing clicked.
Yeah.
Second year, I met... But I was roommates with my friend Tim, who I just mentioned was in this play.
Right.
His name's Tim Conlon. I met another skateboarder named Ian Harshman, who is now a very successful DJ. He tours internationally. He's produced songs for Snoop Dogg. My friend Ian taught my friend Tim, who was already a visual artist, how to do graffiti. And Tim has become an artist that's been in the Smithsonian and professionally... It's kind of weird. He learned how to do graffiti in college.
Hmm.
So he'd spend his nights being a criminal, essentially.
Wow.
And it paid off, like, really big for him. So I shouldn't overlook that. But yeah. I wasn't feeling the creativity.
Sure.
At that point. And I was kind of bored. And then the next year...
Were you doubting your move?
I was definitely doubting my move. Because I was like, oh, you know all that partying I thought I hated it? That sounds kind of fun right about now. Like, this is really boring.
But I wish I had the mix. But you still did your work, though.
I still did my work.
Yeah.
I wasn't having a great time. I didn't click with anybody besides my friend Tim, who I'd known from high school. Then the next year, it was like, I met two really cool people. A lot of cool people, actually, but two stood out. One guy from Pottstown, Pennsylvania, and another guy from Virginia named Randy Bobbitt. Who's gone on to become, like, he runs a production company now, and I still work with him. We make videos and shorts and stuff all the time. We went on to live in Los Angeles. He's still there. But we started another band, and that was, like, really a big deal. Like, it just felt like it was clicking. We had,
what kind
like,
of band was that?
It was another, like, rap group, but with a band.
Sure.
And it was so much fun. And I also started making films. I realized, like, I was like, oh, I'm going to major in film production. Like, I just kind of stumbled upon that. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so now I'm shooting on film, making music. All of a sudden, like, everything's very exciting. I'm 20 years old. I'm still skateboarding. Like, it's all of a sudden tons of fun. And all these doors seem to be opening, you know, because it's all for fun at that point in a way.
Right.
There's no real... You don't have to make a living off of it. It's just, like, all good. And now I'm studying past artists, and, like, I'm getting inspired. I know all this stuff. I'm studying, like, current stuff that's going on.
And you're finding yourself.
Music is really exciting to me at that point. Like, you know, what's on the radio at that point. And, then I realized I was going to go to Los Angeles after I graduated.
What made you think Los Angeles? The music, the band,
No, it was more the film production. That seemed to be like what I was going to be doing because I was majoring in it.
Sure.
And also, another thing that opened up crazy doors for me, I remember I was snowed in. I don't know if you remember, I think it was 94 going into 95. There was a huge snowstorm in Maryland, and I was just like stuck at home. I went to the St. Mary's College Library, and I got On the Road by Jack Kerouac. And No One Here Gets Out Alive, the Jim Morrison biography.
Okay.
And it was all about, like, heading west and everything. And, like...
Go west.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, me and my buddy, who was also in my band, the summer of 94 or 95, we drove all the way to San Francisco and back.
Wow.
And it was, like, it just opened up so many doors in my mind because it was, like... Oh, all you have to do is get in the car and you can just do it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I've always just been in Maryland, visiting New Jersey, maybe upstate New York, but that was with my parents. It didn't seem like I had that kind of freedom. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, you can do like whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You don't need a lot of money or anything. You can just do stuff. And that was when I was like, well, I'll just go to Los Angeles just like I went to San Francisco. Like, what's the big deal? So I did it again in 97. Immediately got a job at a movie theater out in Los Angeles, which is, you know, it's a weird thing to get after you have a college degree, but that was like really great. It was in West Hollywood, and it was like a really trendy art theater, and like everybody that worked there had a film production degree.
You know, everybody was a director. Yeah. So we'd all bring out our VHS tapes and we'd
show your stuff.
We'd show our stuff to each other. It was a very creative environment. And also, I think 2 years later, one of the guys that worked there made a feature-length film about the movie theater, and I was like one of the main actors in that. He just cast me in it because he could obviously see me doing the role.
Sure. What year are we talking?
This was 99.
Okay.
And so the movie theater is called Sunset 5.
Is it still around?
Yeah, it's still around. It's been bought up, and it's not the same thing it used to be. But it's still right there on Sunset and Crescent Heights in Los Angeles. And my friend Randy that I was telling you about, he came to Los Angeles and he ended up producing that thing. That was like our first like big thing, even though it never really came out. The director was a little nutty and he would he was always trying to like re-edit and re-edit and re-edit. He had me come in and do voiceovers for like almost 10 years. He would hit me up once a year to do like redo my lines because he was just so crazy, like Howard Hughes or some shit.
So
we filmed it in 99. I think in 2007 I was headlining a late show at the Irvine Improv in Southern California, and this dude came up to me after the show and he was like, hey, were you in a movie called Sunset 5? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, cool, we work for Billy, we got we want to do some ADR. He wants to get like two more lines. They stalked me at a stand-up show. And then come on. Because like, I thought they were going to give me a compliment, like, we like the show. Like,
yeah.
And then I was like, come on. I'm like, we went in the green room. They go, all right, here's the lines. It was like two lines. I did them both 8 different ways because I was so used to doing them by then.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, that's it. I go, that's it. And I even told Billy before that, the director before that, I go, look. Because that's when I had a day job and I was doing stand-up at night. I was getting very close to, like, really becoming a professional comedian. I can feel it, and I'm like drained. You know how it is.
Yeah.
You work and you do stand up, and you are fucking exhausted, man. And every second of your life goes towards making your life better, and it's great, and it's exciting. But Jesus Christ, if I had to go do this ADR that I took off a month of work for in 99,
wow.
You know, like I took off a month of work to do your movie. That's when you had me. I didn't get paid for the movie, you know? And so, but that was still a great experience doing that movie. And listen, now that it's over, it's funny to like rag on him for making me do that.
Jesus. So what got you into stand-up?
What got me into stand-up was this is something I left out of my story. Okay. I loved stand-up comedy in the 80s.
Okay.
Because stand-up was huge in the 80s.
It was like
the biggest thing in the world. And there was only like, I didn't have cable. So it was just once a week, there was a show called Comic Strip Live on Channel 5 where I lived. And it came on at, I think, 11 o'clock. And then Saturday Night Live came on at 11:30. And so I would watch both those, flip back and forth.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I just loved it. I just loved it. But I also thought...
Who are your guys and gals that you liked?
I don't know, because you couldn't really follow anybody back then.
Okay.
Like, they were just on the TV, that and then they were just lost.
Yeah,
I remember Pauly Shore was funny. I remember David Spade was funny.
Yeah.
Other than that, I can't really remember until I saw a guy named Geechee Guy. I ran into him at the Improv. I was like, dude, I saw you on Comic Strip Live. And I'm quoting jokes from like 86, and he's like, oh god, dude, please get those jokes away from me. I'm like, nah, dude, it was funny if you're 12. But then in the 90s was an interesting decade, because as early as 91 or 92 we were already bagging really hard on the 80s. Like, if you watch music videos, like Nirvana and Smash, or like Stone Temple Pilots are making fun of videos from the 80s. And the 80s were like instantly lame in the 90s. And I kind of thought stand up was kind of left over from that. And so when I'm in LA, I see the Laugh Factory, I see the Comedy Store, and it clicks, oh, there's stand up comedy here. I kind of wanted to do it as a goof, as like a throwback.
How old were you?
I was 23.
Okay.
And I went up and did it, and I was like, oh, this is exciting though.
What did you go up with? Like, did you think like
I did a joke. I think the main joke I did, it got me really far. This main joke I did the first time I did stand up, I got like sort of a development deal with Castle Rock years later. Shit.
based on this joke and the jokes that went with it. And it even, the joke, I think, even made it to my half hour special on Comedy Central in 2011.
Okay.
So, like, I was onto something. I just talked about how my college degree was worthless.
Yeah.
And that, like, my college degree had coupons at the bottom of it.
Did like, you know, like, so did you map it out before you knew you were going
up? I mapped it out, and I waited in line at the Laugh Factory, because that's all, I went into work where I worked. Where, I worked at a video, I eventually started working at a video duplication place.
What is that, like, just...
So, back in the day before streaming, in the late 90s, and before then,
yeah,
you used to have to make copies of your videotapes to send them around Hollywood for people to look, and for stand-up, too.
Sure.
For anything, really. And so that's what we did. We made video copies. And the internet probably killed that business. I don't think it's really around anymore. But I asked a friend of mine who I knew was an actor. He was a sketch actor.
Sure.
I said, where do people do stand-up? Like, how do I do it? And he goes, I see people waiting in line at the Laugh Factory. And I go, okay, I'll go do that. I took the day off of work. Mm-hmm. I went down there. And I remember standing in line with one guy, and he's talking shop with me. He's like, so where do you... He's like, where do you get up? I'm like, oh, I've never done this. This is my first time. He's like, you don't go up at the Laugh Factory your first time. He's like, you know, you go to coffee houses, you work it out. He's like, that's like going to a law office and being like, I want to be a lawyer, but I don't have any degrees.
Do you remember who that guy was?
No, I remember he was very funny, but I haven't seen him in a long, long time.
Okay.
But he was good. Mm-hmm. And he gave me good advice, to be honest with you. But
you went up anyway.
I told everybody I was going to do it. All my friends, they were going to come see me. And I also wasn't thinking of it as a career either. So, like, who cares if it... I mean, my stomach was in knots.
Sure, of course.
But theoretically, this wasn't my plan in life. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
So what does it really hurt? And it was more about, like, well, I told my girlfriend at the time and my friend that I was going to do it. And I just didn't feel like backing out because I was very adventurous at that time.
Yeah.
I was like, you know... I just was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it this once. And I remember it was a good audience. It was presented as an open mic. So I did fine. I felt that rush of laughter. I had that beginner's luck that a lot of comics have, even though like certain jokes I couldn't even remember. And I think my last line of the night was, oh, fuck, I forgot the punchline. And the guy on the side goes, that's okay. And like he got me out on like some energy. And but it was like it was a rush. And I noticed that like I was at least a little bit good at it at certain moments.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I just really started hitting the grind of it. And that's really when you find out like how tough it is. Once I then took the guy's advice.
Right.
Go do the coffee shops. Go do the open mics. And that shit is brutal.
So you basically came up in LA.
Yeah.
So what was that scene like? What was it like grinding it out?
Grinding it out was...
In L.A.
It was a very interesting time in stand-up. Because like I said, stand-up was really dead.
Late 90s.
There was stand-up, like... Chris Rock was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there was anybody else.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know.
When did
I also wasn't paying attention to stand-up.
Sure.
So I don't know. And you couldn't, like, just... Again, you had to wait for your comics to come on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And that wasn't all day. That was just, like, at certain times during the week. And I really wasn't interested in, like, following other people at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now I totally respect everybody, every different type of comic. At the time, I had that youthful ignorance where, like, I know what's cool. Everything else is kind of whack.
Who did you start with? Do you remember who you started with?
I started with a guy named Sam Tripoli. I started with, he's probably one of the only guys that's still doing it right now. But there's lots of people I'd see around when I was going to the open mics, like Ken Jung, Dr. Okay. Ken, was around. I met him very early on.
Was he cool?
He's a very nice guy. And I worked with him a lot in my early years. We would end up, like, I'd end up emceeing, he'd end up featuring at, like, the improvs. Zach Galifianakis was around. Chris Hardwick was around.
Yeah.
All these guys, the alt scene was alive and well, and it was a pure alt scene. Like,
you're saying
it
was kind of alt when you started?
For sure. And that's kind of silly now that I look back on it, because to truly be an alt comic, it's like anything else. You have to be good at the basics before you can flip it.
Yeah.
You know, and all those original alt comics were guys that worked in the clubs and stuff.
Like Maron, Garofalo.
All those people, they did it legit a little bit, and then they also wanted to do their hot take on it as well.
Sure.
You know, but I would just love that comedy immediately and went straight to that.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, that got me some attention. I ended up getting on television eventually with that brand.
What was like one of your first TV gigs?
My first TV gig was the Craig Ferguson Show.
Okay.
And I immediately did a bunch of TV. This was like in 2005 into 2006. I did Craig Ferguson Show, Last Comic Standing, and then Live at Gotham on Comedy Central, all within like 6 months.
Wow.
It was really exciting. And then I also hooked up with Daniel Tosh, like maybe a year later. He started bringing me on the road.
And how old were you when that started to happen?
I was a good 30, 31 years old when that started to happen. So there was 7 years.
Yeah.
And I even got some more beginner's luck around 2001. I went up at the Improv, and they started paying attention to me. And I ended up being managed by them for a little bit. And we even had like, I don't want to call it the development deal because I didn't get paid any money, but I had like a legitimate showrunner and a production company, and we went around town pitching like a sitcom based on my like 5 minutes of comedy that I had. Yeah. It's kind of like, that was like a phenomenon back then.
Right.
They would pitch sitcoms based on like showcase sets.
Sure.
Not hour-long sets, showcase sets, and that's all I had. So, yeah. And like, again, like opening for Tosh, I was very rewarded for doing like kind of like all fucking with the audience type, not exactly like straightforward comedy.
Sure.
And then around, I don't know, after my half hour special came out and it was time for me to like headline on my own and stuff, I started like trying to be more palatable for like the average audience.
Right.
I don't know if that's selling out or what, but that felt like the right thing to do.
Well, talk about that. Like, what does that entail? Because it seems like, I mean, that's kind of what we're doing now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like, the thing that we're doing here is just like, because you can't, it has to be PG-13.
Yes.
And I don't think like my act is like, oh, I'm fucking dirty. But yeah. It's just like, there's places that I go that, you know, maybe there's social things that I talk about that are kind of watered down.
You're conscious,
yeah,
of like people's feelings in the audience this week,
yeah,
because we've been told to be that way, folks.
Right, right.
We've been told like keep it PG-13,
mm-hmm.
which is a very vague, thing because this PG-13 movie is different than that PG-13 right. movie.
And I notice in some PG-13 movies you get one fuck.
Yeah. So it's like what they're basically telling you is, if someone gets mad at you, we told you so.
Yeah.
They can't tell you what not to do because they don't know what not to do.
Right.
They, you know, they're not going to sit there and go through our acts and tell us what not to do. They're just like, use your best judgment. Mm-hmm. And if you make the entire audience mad, you're on your own, asshole.
Yeah. I just like, and I like that the clock is there and it's just like, all right, time to go.
Yeah.
But it's still fun, but it's just like, I'm just really...
You have to think about it.
Yeah.
And that's not as much fun when you have to
mm-hmm.
think about it. Whereas, like, in any given show, you don't want to piss off the audience anyways.
Right.
And depending on where you are, you can read the room,
mm-hmm.
but there's usually not someone on top of that telling you, hey, don't... Because we don't want to make the audience mad.
No.
We want... Here's something people might not know. We want the audience to have a good time.
Right.
And we are trying our best, even if we're pushing buttons here or there, we're trying our best to entertain you.
Mm-hmm.
Trust us. We want it to go well.
Right, right.
But
I don't think that's selling out, though.
Like, I don't either.
You're trying to make yourself... you're trying to make the thoughts that are in your head palatable for a general audience. Like, you're just...
I think it's maturity as well, too. Yeah. Like, I used to have an attitude like, if you don't get it, then screw you. But now, across the board in my life, I'm more interested in reaching out, meeting people halfway.
Trying to connect.
Yeah. And like not, all right, if you're sensitive about this, I'm not going to mess with you.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. And in my personal relationships, like, okay, you know, I used to be a jerk if I had a girlfriend who wanted to talk on the phone too much. Now I'm like, okay, that's what she wants.
That's what she likes.
I'll meet her halfway on that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a relationship. It's an agreement. Like, and a 20-minute conversation with a bunch of people is the same deal.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I don't know. I was just taking shortcuts in the past, I think. Mm. Now I'm like, Well, I don't know. It's just like, I just say that because I think I'm better now.
Well,
you know what I mean?
It's good that you think, I mean, you should think you are. Yeah.
So, it's hard to get into specifics.
Okay.
But
yeah.
It's just kind of like, I was before more interested in being like an artist.
Right.
And now I'm more interested. I still want to be an artist, but I'm performing a service for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm aware of that. And I want people to be happy with the service. And I want to connect more with the audience,
yeah,
too. It's for me, too. I want to connect more.
Sure.
You know?
Because some of it has to be on your own terms, too.
It always has to be on your own terms because you have to come up with material.
Right.
Which means something has to be interesting enough to you for you to write down and develop.
Yeah.
And then make presentable for other people. So
exactly.
It's never, unless you're actually, which I've never done, unless you're actually like, okay, what can I write about that people will like?
Yeah.
That's something that, if you read a book called The War of Art, they say that's what hacks do. And they're not talking about comedians in general. They're talking about all kind of artists.
Right.
If you sit down and go, okay, what would everyone like to hear about? And how can I present it in a way that everyone would like it on top of that? It's like, that's when you become a hack and that's when you're like less of an artist. But if you sit down and you go, all right, here's how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to write it in a way that I feel I can communicate it. Then I'm going to go up on stage and I'm going to find out over years the best way to present it so that the most people can understand it. That's the hardest part about stand-up, is finding common ground with strangers. And not just this stranger or that stranger. 100 people that are completely different than the other. They don't all know each other. This week, they're not all from the same town.
Right.
They're completely different. How can I essentially make what I'm thinking universal?
Yeah.
And that's the game, man. And that's what's tough about it.
Yeah. And I think it's fun, too.
It is fun.
Like putting it together and it's like, oh, they fucking laughed at that.
You're communicating on such a big level.
Mm-hmm.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that you kind of, like, forget. Like, I was talking, like, the last episode I recorded, just talking about it. And I think the older I get, the more I appreciate the journey.
Man.
Where, like, you think about, like, 10 years ago, I walked into an open mic and didn't know what the fuck was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in a hotel because of comedy.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, it's amazing when you think about it.
It is amazing when you think about it.
Obviously, you want to be, so I want to be the best, or I want to be.
And people can even make you feel that way, too. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, just getting to this weekend in Atlantic City is such a huge accomplishment. Now, you shouldn't rest on this accomplishment.
Right, exactly.
But you need to appreciate how impossible it is to get here.
It's crazy,
you know?
Man. It's fucking like, It's really humbling, like, the more that I think about it, just, like, where you just kind of, and I had help, like, other comics, my parents, like, throwing me cash here and there, or, like, like, hey, we believe in you, and blah, 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 and, or just, like,
but
everything.
But you're the one that put in the work.
Yeah.
And you're the one that, like, fucking got in front of that firing squad.
Bomb.
You know? Like, it's rough, folks. Yeah.
Talk about when you were doing your, like, I mean, I guess maybe like your half hour when you were putting it together. What was that? What was that?
That was like an incredibly exciting time because I was right about to go on a tour with Daniel Tosh. It was a 2-month tour.
What year were we
talking?
Theater
tour, 2010.
Okay.
So I already knew I was going to be gone from like the end of September to the end of November, just doing this tour. And I was so excited.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
Just you and him?
No, and another guy named Jasper Red.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know of him. I don't know him, but yeah.
So we were going to go on this tour. And then I had turn my phone off for the day because, like, I like to do that sometimes. And all of a sudden, my home phone starts ringing. I still had a home phone at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's Tosh. He's like, did you get my messages?
Yeah.
You know? He goes, you're getting a half hour special. He's like, he's already hours into this thought process.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea I was getting a half hour special. Okay. He had heard word because he obviously has a relationship with Comedy Central.
Did you submit it to them?
I submitted the worst tape.
What? How? Why,
I took
why was
like
it bad?
four 7 minute or 4 6 minute sets from the Comedy and Magic Club.
Okay.
It was a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
I didn't care, but you know, sometimes your work ethic can be weird, because it can be like, I'm still submitting this half-ass thing. Now it's half-ass, but I still submit it. Like, I'm in your mind, it's like, it's a tough call.
Right.
But then I you know, for whatever reason, I got the. I think I know how I got the half hour special. I'm sorry, my phone's ringing.
Oh, that's all good.
This is how I think I got the half hour special. I was opening for Tosh in San Francisco. He was taping a special, and they were filming my part too. And I was pretty sure I wasn't getting this half hour special. And so I'm treating this taping like my half hour special, essentially.
Yeah,
of course. Gonna get the tape. It's at the end of the day, a tape is a tape.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. As soon as I get up there, someone pulls a fire alarm at the venue.
What the
and
fuck?
I immediately realize, like, my tape is ruined. I go up there, but I handle it well, and I kept everybody laughing, and I got the situation diffused.
Mm-hmm.
And after the show, one of the Comedy Central producers came up to me, and she was like, "You saved the day. You kept everybody there. If they would have left, we don't know how we would have got them back. Blah, blah, blah." And I think I was really on their radar after that point. And
sure.
Tape Smape. Yeah. Who cares about the tape?
They knew you were competent.
They hooked me up.
Yeah.
Well,
that always helps. I mean, you're opening for...
It always helps.
Yeah.
It always helps. So I was in such a great position that I got to leave in the middle of the tour and go tape my half hour for a couple days.
Where did you tape it at?
In New York City.
So,
in other words, I got about 2.5-3 weeks of theater shows to prep for this thing.
Where'd you tape it at in New York?
I can't remember. No, it was somewhere around Hell's Kitchen.
Okay.
And it was at some school. And so I was in like such good shape. And like the audience there was only like 400 people. Which all of a sudden didn't seem like that big of a deal. When I did Last Comic Standing, that was the first time I did a theater. I was lost. This thing, I was so comfortable.
Yeah.
I was so comfortable doing this half hour special. And it was great. I loved it.
And how were your parents, like, throughout your journey, how have they been?
I think they thought it was really cute when I first started. You know what I mean? They thought, look at them, you know. And then, but there's always been, like, periods where, like, it really wasn't working out that well. And not a lot of money's coming in. And they're not, you know, it's not very practical. And they're very practical people. So when it's not going well, they're not interested in talking me into it. They're not like, stick with it. They're like, yeah, what are you thinking about doing? We're interested in what else you're thinking about doing.
Yeah.
When it's going well, they're less worried. You know, but it's not, I don't think it's easy for parents.
They want you to be okay.
All they care about is they'd rather have you be bored out of your goddamn mind and just have all your bills paid.
Yeah.
And like, who cares if, you know,
hate your life.
Like, no chance of getting something better.
Yeah.
Not that they're against that, but they'd much rather have you be sitting in an office making, like, I don't know, 60, 70 a grand a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that doesn't sound bad to me either, to be perfectly honest with you. But that's never what I was interested in.
Yeah, yeah. It's not. It's one of those things. Well, and then we'll kind of wrap it up with this. What do you think, like, now living in New York, what's the some of the major differences you find between, like, being a comic in New York versus being one in L.A.?
It's hard for me to say.
Why?
Well, I just don't have a handle on either scene anymore. You know, I couldn't tell you what an L.A. comic is like. I couldn't tell you what a New York comic is like. I think New York...
Or just based on your experience, you know?
I think one thing I notice about New York comedy is there's a lot of crowd work.
Mm.
And somehow crowd work is always racial.
Oh, God.
Am I wrong about that?
Well, I get the crowd work thing, but like... I mean, I've been on the road with I'm not going to say the guys.
Sure.
But it was just like, I was like, you're headlining and 45 minutes of crowd work.
Right.
And it is racial. And I remember because I was at a casino.
That's kind
of
where crowd work goes to for some reason. Yeah. It's like an easy way to get. It's
weird.
It is. Yeah.
But no, people kind of like that shit, I guess.
People love it.
I don't know. I remember doing a casino. And then I get off stage and I go eat at the buffet. And there's people that left the show to go eat while the headliner's still on stage. It's like, oh, you were funny. The other guy was just being kind of racist. So we left.
I don't want to shit on New York. I'm new to New York, and I love New York. I've only been here since, like, I don't know, maybe a year. I've only had a place in New York since June.
I didn't know that.
I also moved to New York for like 9 months during like one of the crappier parts of my career.
Okay.
And ran out of money and split.
Okay.
And after I left New York, this was in 2012.
Okay.
I went back to LA. Didn't even have a place to stay. I lived in my friend's guest house in East LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't go home. LA wasn't the same when I got back.
Mm.
It just wasn't the same. I missed it when I was in New York, and then when I got back, I was like, this isn't the same. And then I started to miss New York, and I'm like, am I just crazy? Like, or I just miss the, am I just like not happy wherever I am? But the truth is, I went back to New York. I knew my way around New York, and I had friends in New York, so I'd go back as much as possible. And I really started to realize that I liked it much better.
Yeah.
And a big part of it is, and this is very simple and has nothing to do with comedy, I hate driving in Los Angeles.
I heard it's insane.
I mean,
it's crazy.
It makes me really unhappy. So much to the point where, like, my car got wrecked,
mm-hmm.
and I got, like, a lot of money for the car, and I just never bought a new car because I'm like, how can I spend money on something I fucking hate? And eventually, I was just like, eventually I just ended up back in New York. I started dating this girl,
who's my girlfriend now.
It's a woman, and also, like,
can't be mad at that.
Also, I never felt like LA was home after a while.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't because, like, I'm talking about all these exciting things that were happening for a while, and then, like, these things come in trends.
Yeah.
And then, like, the past 5 years, there's been a couple things here or there. I went on tour with Tosh again. I did a TV spot here or there. Mm-hmm. But it just wasn't exciting, man. But when I would go to New York, things were, like, just more exciting. And I feel like myself more in New York, and I'm just more comfortable. And like I said, I got this great girlfriend here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stay as long as possible.
I feel like a lot of comics, a lot of folks that are New York based and they move to LA, they seem to not like it as much.
Well, it's not as,
always come back.
It's not as stand up based.
Yeah. And if you're not, like, they'll move for writing jobs or acting or something, but mostly it's for writing jobs. And just listening to some of my peers talk about it, it's almost like if you're not doing anything, if you don't have anything going on in LA, it's hard to be there.
That's the thing. Like, and like, you can find, but there's less places to get up.
Yeah.
And there's like all this competition to get up at these few places.
Unless you're
and like,
TV,
you'll have like rookies getting up instead of you sometimes. I'm not the least bit bitter about it. I'm mm-hmm. very happy about how far I've gotten and how much stage time I even get to do in LA, but I don't know. And but then there's the other side of that. You're talking to the people that came back. There's a lot of people who moved to LA and they're like, they thought New York was tough and they think LA is easy. You know, there's different, it's different for everybody. And it has to do with, like, it really has to do with how much money you're making.
Right. Yeah. Like,
so if you're making money in Los Angeles, you're going to love Los Angeles. If you struggled in New York, moved to LA for a writing job and just kept working, then you're going to love LA.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to love about LA.
Because there's things about New York that, I mean, I've only been to San Francisco. So
yeah.
I haven't been to LA. But just New York, even having, kind of having money or just kind of like booking a gig is like hitting the lotto.
Yeah.
So maybe I could go see a play or something.
Yeah.
Like, I try to spend money that it's not disposable income, but it's just you try to spend stuff on experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I this year I want to go to see more shows. I want to see more plays.
Yeah.
I want to see more concerts.
I feel like just walking down the street in New York is a cultural experience.
Yeah.
I think there's just so much to see. I'm so inspired by New York City.
Yeah. So
I love it so much, man.
Yeah. Well, what else can we? I think that's about it.
I think we told the kids some interesting things.
We told them some shit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else coming up?
What am I doing?
Can you plug some?
Yeah,
stuff?
I'm going to be in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, February 21st.
Oh, my birthday.
Through 23rd. There you go. For your birthday, I'm doing that.
What's the place?
It's called the Funny Stop.
Okay.
I will put in a good word for you.
Oh.
If you remind me.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I'll be down for some, what's in Ohio?
There's a club called Hilarities in Cleveland.
I've never been there.
It's amazing, dude.
I did Ramon Rivas's festival out there.
I can put in a good word for you there too.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk off.
Yeah.
Well, so I'll put all your Twitter and everything.
Okay, cool.
And yeah. Well, Matt, this has been great,
yeah,
man. Thanks for doing it.
My pleasure.
Yeah. All right. Take it easy, everybody. All right.